Bugs are gross, and I don't like them. Other people clearly feel differently, as two movies about animated insects came out the same year and were both hits. You remember A Bug's Life, kinda, but do you remember Ants? It was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America, not being in the same place edition. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm sad to be in different rooms than Camila Adams.
Hello, I miss you already.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi there.
We are, for the first time, recording via Skype. Thank you. I'm sure that Robin, in the editing process, has made it sound like a seamless transition, but thank you for bearing with us.
Yeah, don't make promises I can't keep.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is perfectly acceptable during these trying times.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know what kind of world you live in as we're as you're hearing this. We are, you know, very early in all of our social distancing. And decided to be extra safe and do it this way. But keep with our schedule, because everyone just has to know how we feel about ants.
Well, yeah, and plus it's just like everybody's starved for entertainment and distraction right now. Especially myself, so.
So why not talk about 1998's dual CGI insect features?
Yikes.
Having now watched this, I now can confirm that I had never seen ants before.
Either. I thought I did, but I did not.
Robin?
I had seen it, and I stand by what I said last week, that ants is better than A Bug's Life. And I would like to go even further say that before I said in everything but appearance, I feel like ants, while like makes some design choices that are questionable, which we'll get into, because... like, A Bug's Life was cutting edge then and now looks weird and shiny and not that great. Whereas ants, you can, like, chalk it up to stylistic choices.
Interesting. All right. That's okay.
Skeptical faces.
Yeah, right? I wasn't feeling this at all.
Okay.
No,
visual choices.
I know that the problem is that the animation is old, but at this point, it is so old that it looks creepy. Like, it looks like one of those YouTube kids videos from, like, Latvia that is probably supposed to indoctrinate your child into something.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the style at the time. But as the movie went on, I was just like, no, maybe this is just ugly and creepy semi-intentionally.
Mm. Well, somebody at some point decided that the ants have noses and teeth.
And that was
a mistake.
Did not like.
They have teeth in Bug's Life too, right? I did put Bug's Life on also, but I was fully engrossed in my coloring book and barely looked at it.
Right.
Oh my God.
Even to dial in farther than that, like, just the way that like a lot of their flesh, their being is presented, doesn't look like a cute cartoon. It's out of a horror movie. Like, their torsos look like Freddy's torso, exactly. Not like a cute animated cartoon.
Freddy Krueger?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, Freddie Mercury. Yes, Freddy Krueger.
Let me do the recap, please.
Oh, yeah. Let's before we nitpick this until we're all sick of everything. Which, hey, our tolerance has gone up. It could be a long episode. Here is Robin with a 60-second recap. I'm watching the clock. And go.
So Woody Allen plays Z, who is a worker ant. And he's essentially like every other Woody Allen character ever. And he decides one day to, why do we do things the way we do them? I'm gonna question things. And he also gets to dance with the princess played by Sharon Stone. Then he accidentally joins a war because he's trying to impress Sharon Stone. He goes in place of a soldier ant played by Sylvester Stallone, and everybody dies except for him. So then he's a war hero, and he goes to meet the princess, and then he's outed as a worker because she knows him as such, and then he accidentally kidnaps her. They go on an adventure outside of the ant colony. They come back just in time to stop Gene Hackman and Christopher Walken from drowning all of the other ants, including Jennifer Lopez. And they save the day, and he gets to marry Sharon Stone. The end.
Hey, right on at 59 yes. seconds.
Yes.
Well done.
Did you practice? Because the listeners at home can't see this. It literally looked like you were looking up at your own brain throughout, which made me think it was off the cuff.
It was fully off the cuff. That's how I like to do it. And I only barely editorialized, and that's why I finally did it right.
Congratulations on nailing the 60-second recap. Yeah, where would animated films be without the lead character questioning why everyone else always does things the same way? Man,
has that been the running theme with all the animated films we've done thus far? Or
I guess it's like the opposite of the Lego movie.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Still, individualism versus conformity is to computer animated movies what, I don't know, people hearing something they shouldn't have heard is to Shakespeare. Like, this is just so many animated movies really rely heavily on, here's this one guy that asks why.
Yeah,
that's true.
I wonder why that is. Why is that the big plot point in animated films? And
I think it's something that children connect to because kids are told rules all the time and don't understand things.
Okay, so you would think that as adults that we would try to squash that as much as possible.
Although this movie's pretty, like, there's a lot of things in this movie that I'm like, yikes. Like, there's a whole conversation with a decapitated ant head.
That is mind-blowing.
I had to Google, I was like, is Ants a kids movie? Because I'm thinking it's not. There's been a lot of casual swearing and
genocide,
a lot of death and destruction. Like and it took me a while to realize that the head was decapitated. And not like, I thought he was covered up with like dirt and stuff. It's like, no, that's just a decapitated head. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool.
The fact that it is so cleanly decapitated makes it worse. Like,
yes.
Like it is so uncanny. If you don't know what we're talking about, in maybe like 30 minutes into Ants, his accidental army buddy, Barbados or something?
I don't remember. And Danny Glover
is decapitated in battle, and Woody Allen Ant has a whole scene with him. There's no gore. There's no like, oh, his body. Like, it is just a lonely, clean head on the ground. And it is something out of a twisted German expressionism art film.
And they also do the nice slow pan back to all of the dead bodies in the war ground, which, again, I was taken aback very much by how gruesome this movie was. I mean, it wasn't like you were saying there, like, it wasn't gruesome, like blood and guts and gore, but still just the thought of all of that, just like the visuals of the dead ants and their tongues out and whatnot.
When Jane Curtin gets smushed at the picnic, I can't remember what kind of bug she is. That's also very upsetting.
Yeah. was it her or was it Muffy or Muffy or Chip Chip or something?
I think Jane Curtin is the actor playing Muffy. I'm not sure though.
But yeah, that was disturbing. And then the whole the princess and whatnot getting stuck on the glue or the gum on the bottom of the shoe.
That, honestly, well, that is definitely a part where the animation looks old. Yeah. That was one of the cooler parts, like vision wise. If that makes sense. Like, the storyboard of that is very cool.
Well, we are going to, I'm sure we are going to get into who is this for very soon.
It's for Robin Hitchcock, seriously. I like this movie.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Here's the factsy segment before we go too deep. Ants was released October 2nd, 1998. It was the 19th number one film of that year. won its first weekend with $17.1 million, finishing ahead of one other new release, Robin Williams in What Dreams May Come. Visually interesting. I had a very awkward young moment with my father when he asked what movie me and my, you know, eighth grade girlfriend were watching, and I muttered the name of that movie, and he exclaimed in horror, "Wet Dreams? What?" Which, you don't have to go far for the porn parody title.
No, at all. It's right there. It's a gift. It
finished in second that weekend, $15.8 million. The only other new release, Night at the Roxbury, which finished in fourth with $9.6 million. So, odd weekend. Ants won the following weekend as well with $14.7 million. The only other new release that week in the top 10 was Holy Man with Eddie Murphy, debuted in fifth with $5.1 million. Second place in Ants's second weekend was the fourth weekend of the original Rush Hour. Ants went on to earn $90.7 million. The 21st highest grossing film of the year. It was soundly defeated by A Bug's Life. We'll get more into A Bug's Life, which was fourth for the year with $162 million. The top three films of that year were Saving Private Ryan, Armageddon, and There's Something About Mary. This is before the Best Animated Feature Oscar existed. Nevertheless, Ants was not even nominated for the Best Animated Feature at the Annie Awards. The annual Animated Awards did not make the cut. The five nominees were eventual winner The Iron Giant, A Bug's Life, Prince of Egypt, Tarzan, and South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Ants is the first release by DreamWorks Animation, the distant second place animation studio that we have come to tolerate, has put out 37 total films. That'll become 38 when Trolls World Tour drops in theaters and streaming in a couple of weeks. Ants was the first, followed by Prince of Egypt, The Road to El Dorado, and Chicken Run in 2000. Then Shrek in 2001. Shrek obviously solidified the studio. That now contains franchises including How to Train Your Dragon, Madagascar, Kung Fu Panda, and Boss Baby. Despite being the first release, Ants is the fifth lowest grossing global film in the studio history. I apologize for bucking our normal format and talking about global returns. This is what Wikipedia had. Ants is fifth lowest in terms of global box office for DreamWorks, ahead of only Abominable last year, which I guess bombed more than I figured. Captain Underpants, a horse movie called Spirit from 2002, a 2003 Sinbad movie, and the aforementioned Road to El Dorado, which is the worst performer in DreamWorks history. Finally, I have some notes here about Bug's Life, but Robin, I think you might know this stuff better than I do. So, do you have are you up on the Ants Bug's Life feud more than I am?
Well, what I do know is that because Pixar and DreamWorks were both baby animation studios, it is very interesting that they had the same project at the same time. Jeffrey Katzenberg, who is the K in DreamWorks SKG, was the head of Disney Animation during the Disney Renaissance. And I assume that some of his animators ended up at Pixar and some of his animators ended up at DreamWorks. And so they likely were working from initial shared ideas. But that is pure speculation.
Yeah, on the one hand, Katzenberg has said that he had never heard the Bug's Life pitch before pitching Ants. On the other hand, like, the idea for an animated movie about ants and soldier ants specifically apparently goes back to 1988 at Disney. Right. So who knows, like, what, you know, what chains of ideas. In any case, Disney, Pixar, and DreamWorks were, like, had an ugly public feud over what would get released when, and kept moving release dates for different things to try and get the jump on one another, which also affected DreamWorks Animation's second movie, Prince of Egypt. And both studios were, here's a slice of the time, both studios were also desperate to avoid competition with the Rugrats movie, which was also coming out then. Ants ended up coming out first by about 6 weeks, but Bug's Life was definitely the bigger hit between the two of them by a wide, wide margin. I would say because Bug's Life probably actually aimed itself at the whole family, unlike this movie.
Right. Yeah, this one was definitely more for teenagers and adults than I would say kids. Just even by the simple fact of how visually unstimulating it is. Like, I couldn't imagine toddlers trying to sit through this movie.
Also, like, the whole idea of kids being like, yeah, I really connect with Woody Allen.
Right, exactly.
Right. And his wacky sidekick, Sylvester Stallone, who, by the way, is acting his ass off in this
one. Really?
Right?
That was a really good period for him. Like, that's when Copland came out. Like, Sly was at the top of his game in the late 90s.
Yeah, I really appreciate, like, the extra effort he put in his enunciation. And it's because almost, like, if I didn't know, like, I almost would not have recognized his voice. I would have thought that maybe it was somebody that sounded like Sly, but yeah.
Did you guys think that the scene where they were beating him up and then he was like, I'm not telling you nothing, and then they show up with Jennifer Lopez, do you think that that was implied sexual assault or risk thereof?
Yes.
I think so. Like,
that was one of the dark, dark moments.
My brain was trying to be like, no, they're just like semi-torturing her because that was the better option. But like,
they like pushed her down on a table.
Yeah, the way that went was so dark. I think you're right.
It's just, yeah, I spent the whole time just like, why? What? Really? So,
also going to say that, because I always am like, how many Oscar nominees are in this cast? Do you have guesses?
I would say 7.
That's exactly right. Yay!
Great job.
Yeah, there's 3 winners. There's Anne Bancroft, Christopher Walken, and Gene Hackman. In addition to them, there's Sharon Stone, Sylvester Stallone, Woody Allen was nominated for Best Actor for Annie Hall, and there's one. Oh, and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah,
It's definitely like when you were reading off the cast last week or last time, Sean. It's surprising at how high caliber of actors. Like, these are most of these guys are A-list actors, as opposed to Bug's Life, where you've got Dennis Leary and I forget whoever else is in it. But
Dave Foley.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's surprising. And I still don't understand how Woody Allen, like, did he pay for this? Like, I don't know why they chose him as the lead, because his voice is so annoying. I think that's probably what really took a lot out of this movie for me. Just having to listen to Woody Allen and just, ugh.
Well, that and the tenor of his voice being so weird in an animated movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, they played to his persona and had him do all of this, like, commenting on the world around him. And that was, you know, sometimes funny, but really, like, mentally disruptive. They're at the bar and he has that line that's like, yeah, I have an issue with drinking from the anus of another creature. And
movies in a row with an anus joke.
Exactly.
And fascist metaphors that aren't well hidden. Anyway. Yeah. And like, a lot of those lines, like, I chuckled, but then I was like, well, wait a minute, you're kind of just picking apart the world that you're asking me to buy into at the same time.
Yeah, it was very weird. Is this the best I could come up with for this movie? It's, I think, yeah, it's just the Woody Allen and his neuroticism, and it just doesn't play well for me with animation and just like the state of the world that he's in, and it just pulls you right out of it. It just pulls you, yeah, it's just too much.
I think I accepted it. I totally understand where you're coming from, Camila. I'm not sure why I was able to accept it. It was nice not having to look at Woody Allen's face, because I genuinely, like, I was a fan of Woody Allen's movies, you know, like, I like his persona. So being able to, like, dip my toes back in, like, oh, remember this character that you liked, and you don't have to think about who he is right now. That was sort of nice for me.
I feel much the same way generally as Camila. I just didn't think it. I thought the tone was too off-putting. The humor was too far, you know, too few and far between. And I thought it was oddly slow. It had that thing where they, like, felt like they had to animate every individual reaction distinctly. So it, like, had a lot of those pacing when it's like, I'm saying the line. Now I'm making the face that is in a reaction to the line I just said. Now I'm waiting for you to make a face. Now you say your line. It was a really tedious 82 minutes. But that's me. Robin, you liked it. Tell us why.
Tell us why you liked it.
So I guess that I just love, I think it's an abundance of cleverness, and it's not anything like really spectacular, but all of the like, let's make the human cliche be applied to the ant world things that they do, like, you know, life is hard when you're one in a family of 5 billion or whatever. Like, I'm an easy mark for that kind of joke. Like, because I write comedy sketches, right? And like, a lot of that is, okay, take the rules of the normal world, tilt them slightly, and apply them to a different situation. So I get a kick out of that. And I think they do it pretty well here. That's really it.
I did like the princess identifying herself and then the wasp saying, "Ugh, they're Euro trash too."
Yes. That
was a genuine laugh line.
They're wasps. Of course they're wasps.
Oh, oh, I just got that.
There it is.
See, the movie is clever. They're the best part of the movie, for sure.
Yes.
I did enjoy the leaning so hard into product placement during the Insectopia sequence.
Yeah.
Where clearly they said, we have a justifiable reason to fill the entire screen with a Pepsi can. We're going to. Well, should we rate it? I mean, does anyone have any other extensive takes? I just wrote down stolen valor in regards to Woody's fake military service.
I wanted to mention Anne Bancroft, the queen, constantly giving birth.
Yeah, that was good.
And just like she like acknowledges her tiny little baby and hands it away.
Happening?
Yes.
Is that what was happening?
Yes.
I couldn't understand. Oh my god. I didn't know what they were doing. Like, I thought that people were coming and she was checking out the babies to figure out where they're supposed to go. But gross.
Also, I just wanted to ask, like, you said, Camila, that you had recently watched A Bug's Life. Like, did you think that that held up? Because A Bug's Life, like, to me, is easily one of the weakest Pixar movies.
No, I still enjoyed it, like, a lot.
Really?
I got a lot of laughs out of it. And, I mean, maybe not a lot, but still, like, I definitely find Bug's Life superior to Ants, in my
opinion.
Interesting.
Okay.
But, yeah, I still enjoyed it.
Most of A Bug's Life that doesn't revolve around the circus bugs, like the circus bugs are great, I love them, and then everything else I'm kind of like, all right.
No, I think also what I really like about A Bug's Life as opposed to Ants is, yes, it's much more visually stimulating, it's much brighter and a little more what you'd expect in an animation, and just like the clever things that they do, and like the how they make like normal things like what the bugs use these things for. And, a sardine can would be like a wagon and all that, you know, like the circus, the animal cracker box and all that stuff. I like seeing like the normal stuff that we use and throw away and all that kind of stuff, how the bugs use it and repurpose it for all their needs. But I didn't really see a lot of that in Ants.
Yeah, honestly, it feels like a budgetary thing in a way, almost like Ants. Is a lot of it is just ants in a cave, right?
Right.
That's what we've got the budget to draw.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and we do the same thing of, okay, it's like must work culture. And, you know, yeah, we get it. You know, Americans are blindsided by that we're all, you know, conditioned to think like, oh, must slay, must grind, must work, must always blah, blah, blah. And then just like everything, I guess every aspect, every time of their life was designated to something, even like down to their little free time dance, like, now it's time for y'all to dance, come on out here, and everybody doing the same dance and all that stuff. And I don't know, it just it just wasn't my thing.
It made me nostalgic for the PlayStation 1. I was like, oh yeah, they're kind of ugly, weird looking characters that don't move right, I remember this. Let's rate it.
Really bugged me, also, pun intended.
Their dance moves.
Yeah, the dance scene, it was...
I think it's because...
Like, what song are they dancing to? Because they were all offbeat, and I'm like, Camila, Suzanne...
Guantanamera.
Like an elevator music version of Guantanamera. I think they didn't have the computing power to animate these creatures dancing, like, distinctly. So then you, like, look back, and it's like, oh, that's... They're just all moving in exact unison. And it's just some horrible dream.
Let's make it a joke.
We'll have Robin go last since she's going to bring this average up. I searched my heart and landed on a 35. It's a 35.
Oh, I get 41.
I'm not that high. I have 67.
That's high. That's a good score.
My scale is far more generous than yours. Mine goes above 80.
Didn't I give an 84 or something one time? I don't know. We don't have our full setup here. Gives us an average of 47 and two thirds. This is almost exactly average. This is just about the most average thing that we have reviewed. Which, that feels fine.
It's right. It feels right.
This is, by the way, the second most average movie we have ever rated. Sum of All Fears was a 50 and change. So those are our bastions of mediocrity. We've got our number one movie in America bingo cards here, and I don't know if we're adding anything. It's kind of a war movie.
It's a war. This counts.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Scratch off war on your bingo sheet. They look like aliens, but they're not. It dabbles in horror, sometimes intentionally, but I wouldn't count that. Yeah, I think that that's the only one we get. Has anyone achieved bingo?
Nope.
No, but I'm closer than I've ever been in that I finally have three in a line.
Okay.
If we draw a Marvel movie, I will have bingo.
Ooh, that's exciting.
If we get a coming-of-age tale, I have bingo.
That's... Between those two categories, that's a good 60% of the list. So,
right.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Dear God, please, we need at-home entertainment options. What has everyone been watching inside their cocoons?
I watched the sequel to All the Boys I Loved. P.S. I Still Love You.
I couldn't stay awake during it.
Yeah.
And I loved the first one.
Me too. And it's like it's a different director for one. It's a male director.
Oh.
And so yeah, it just takes everything out of it all together. And it's like, I don't like it. It wasn't as interesting or as fun as the first one that I thought. So I think that's the only new thing that I saw.
I watched both of the things we talked about in last episode. I watched Spencer Not for Hire, whatever it's called. It's great. I mean, it's, you know, there's nothing good about it, but there's everything watchable about it.
Yep.
It's definitely worth your time.
Nice. I did see Yesterday as well as A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I finally watched that. Yesterday was much more entertaining than I thought it would be for me. And I didn't realize, I don't think going in, that it was a British comedy. So I think that kind of helped it a lot more. Mm-hmm. I really do enjoy British humor sometimes much more than American. So I think it probably would have been a much different, probably lackadaisical film if it had been American. And it also made me go on like a Beatles kick for like a day and a half.
There was like a 2 second moment where people were like, Yesterday is going to win Best Picture. Sean, do you remember that?
No, I mean, before we had any idea what things looked like, you know, people were really convinced that it's by Danny Boyle and it's imaginative and it's different and it's heartfelt, it's going to win. And then we all saw it and a lot of us, myself included, went, okay.
Slow in the middle. It got slow for a little bit. So it definitely, I wouldn't ever call it that anything kind of close to being a Best Picture. And Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, I have no like real nostalgic feelings or connections to Mr. Rogers. It wasn't like I was a Captain Kangaroo kid, not necessarily Mr. Rogers. My sister was Mr. Rogers. But every time Tom Hanks was on screen, I wanted to cry. And it wasn't. And this was before I knew about his status.
Yeah.
I can't imagine watching that knowing that he's suffering from the Rona.
Exactly.
As we are recording this, he has been released from the hospital. So
thank goodness.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Idris has the Rona, so.
Yeah, yeah.
God save him.
Who knows what celebrities will have the Rona as you're listening to this. Please don't tell us. We already know. Camila, I loved that. That was one of my top movies of the year, and it didn't quite gain that much traction, you know, and critically. I was kind of the exception in putting it really high. I don't think I was being a Pittsburgh stan with that. I think it was just really great.
Yeah, I had no like, oh, this was in Pittsburgh. Oh, I know where that is, where that was filmed. Like that didn't factor into how much I enjoyed it at all. It was just a really good story that was, and it was told really well.
Robin, tell the listeners who likely already know at this point, but in case anyone missed it, about Universal Studios' social distancing program.
Universal Studios is releasing their recent theatrical releases on demand early. So you can watch The Invisible Man at your house. And
see, I was just talking about this yesterday with somebody. It's like, this is what, because complaining about what's his butt with The Quiet Place. I was like, just fucking release it on demand. We're all going to pay.
So it's looking that way. I don't know about A Quiet Place. I think all of the smaller movies.
I really want to see Invisible Man.
Yes, so. I'm going to watch Invisible Man. Sean told me it's probably too scary for me to watch in the theater. So, like, you know, got to look
problem
on the bright
solved.
Side. Yeah. Right. And like Trolls World Tour is not yet out, but they're doing same day theatrical and video release on Easter weekend. Something that I am interested to see what will happen is that the Academy has rules that you can't be released in any format before your theatrical debut. They have to adopt a new set of rules every year. So it's like they basically do boilerplate. But like, for example, last year they were like, this year's rules changed the name of foreign feature to international feature, blah, blah. Gotcha. So I feel like they might suspend the theatrical requirement because it specifically requires it be released in LA County, and LA County has closed their movie theaters.
Oh, man. Huh. So,
but Sean, why don't you tell us a little bit about this past box office weekend? We are recording on March 17th.
Well, I wanted to add to the Universal note, the four movies we know this affects so far are, and what I thought of them, having seen three of the four of them. I don't know if we talked about Invisible Man on a previous episode. Invisible Man is very enjoyable. It is much scarier than you are suspecting, just because they kind of went back to basics and realized, yes, one, it's creepy when there's someone in the room that you can't see, but two, a lot of, you know, especially big studio horror movies recently have kind of been try hard with the world building and the mythology. A lot of the most effective horror is just a metaphor for something else, and the way that this plays with this character being in a bad relationship, that is putting it mildly, really smart and really effective. So yes, if you're at home when Invisible Man becomes available, I would certainly recommend it. This also applies to The Hunt, which is not very good, but Betty Gilpin is great in it. It has bad political takes. If you take away all the bad political takes, it's another fun Most Dangerous Game riff. You know, that's watchable. I'd say the same thing for Emma, the Jane Austen adaptation.
Emma period.
Emma period. All caps with a period at the end of it. If you don't know what we're talking about, there's a period in the title of this movie. Was that to indicate that it's a period piece?
Sean, I think it might literally be for legal reasons because of the 1996 Emma starring Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, this is an Emma. It's Emma, period.
All other Emmas cease to exist after this. This is it. This is where we stop. Emma,
we're
done.
It looks really pretty and has a great lead actress, Anya Taylor-Joy. It's dull, but like, hey, you got time. So if you want to look at pretty dresses and well-framed shots of the way back days, sure, watch Emma.
Or just watch Clueless again.
Right. Yeah, also. Box office is about to get wacky because more and more theaters are closing, and even the ones that are open certainly aren't having a lot of traffic. Robin, what did you tell me? This was the worst box office in more than 30 years?
No, it's the worst box office in pure numbers since September 2000. Hmm. So even the weekend after September 11th, more people went to the movies, which is shocking. But then if you consider inflation, it is the worst box office weekend on record.
Yeah, more and more major releases are starting to delay. You know, the quote-unquote major releases this weekend were Bloodshot and The Hunt. Those did come out. Another kind of mid-level release that was supposed to come out, My Spy, with Dave Bautista, delayed. So between theaters closing, no real big releases, and people being afraid to go out, very understandably, there wasn't a lot of activity. That's about to get way crazier because more theaters are closing. There is more social distancing, and every upcoming theatrical release has delayed. I have had all screenings removed from my calendar, and everything that was slated for a wide release has either canceled, postponed, or gone to streaming. So I think in like 2 weeks, you're going to see something, you know, probably Onward from Pixar still win the box office with, you know, $2 or $3 million from the few theaters that are still open.
And there's still like a bunch of films that are being filmed that have halted production just because of it too. So this is going to have like this ripple effect for a while about where we get new, we have new content or new films coming out. That sucks.
Well, I think that what's going to happen fairly quickly is some of the, is the big streaming services are going to both buy up more stuff and push those releases. You know, some of those Sundance picks and independent films that haven't really found a home yet or might have otherwise gotten a small release later in the year. Netflix's and your Netflix's and Hulu's and other and HBO probably will start trotting some of those out as here's the new big thing. It's just at home rather than in theaters.
Well, it would be nice to see just things of like just the smaller films that don't get enough attention as is because you've got, you know, things like Marvel movies clogging up the box office that, you know, now maybe they'll get a little more attention, stuff that was, it's already been, you know, it's already in the can, already ready to go.
Right.
And hopefully we'll be able to see some like new entertainment, some new stuff, new blood from new ideas from new filmmakers.
That's such a bright side look at things.
I try.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We
for
need
your
that kind of optimism.
The listeners can't hear that. Camila's being optimistic. She's also wearing an Overlook Hotel shirt. So she is.
It's a nice balance.
I'm usually 8 different places every single day. I am going to start talking to an invisible bartender by like Friday.
I'm going to teach my dog how to mix drinks.
Anything else, or should we draw a movie?
Let's draw a movie.
The number is 252. It's not The Shining, but let's play an awful game. The name in The Shining, famously, blood pours out of the elevator. You could describe that moment using the title of this film.
Bloody Mary?
What is the color of blood in
red.
In a fancy way?
Crimson.
Crimson.
Correct.
Crimson.
Tide?
Crimson Tide.
Oh, that's
tide.
Fun. That's fun. I like
that. Oh, that's a great movie to watch in social distancing. Talk about some close quarters.
Oh, jeez.
What are they trapped in a submarine? I literally don't even know.
I think so. Is this Gene Hackman?
And Denzel, right?
I think so.
Yes, that is correct.
I think I have seen this movie as a child, but I certainly haven't seen it since then, and I've definitely never seen it not edited for TBS or whatever. So,
yeah,
very excited about this draw. That sounds like it's going to be fun.
This is not the one with Steven Seagal, right?
But no. They're the same plot, I'm pretty sure.
I think
sure.
That's Under Siege.
I am thinking of Under Siege.
Yeah, I think that they are similar plots. I think that this is the midpoint between The Hunt for Red October and Under Siege.
Under Siege was the first time I saw nudity in a movie with a group of other, like, peers. Did not know how to react.
Yeah, it's like were you just, like, really still? And just,
yeah, I think I was. Like, I was in a group of, like, 8 other 12-year-old boys, and there's boobs. And, like, I'm like, are we supposed to go woo? Like, what happens now?
It's like, don't react. Don't react. It could be the wrong thing. Just don't say anything. Don't breathe too heavy. Don't... How I was if there was a sex scene when I was watching a movie with my mom. It's like,
right.
Don't react.
Yep.
No, that's an exciting draw. I have no idea how I will feel about Crimson Tide, and I am excited to watch it.
Ditto.
Before we let you get back to reality, Ants was released on October 2nd, 1998. What was the number one album in America? As a reminder, you get 2 points if you guess. You get 1 point if you get it by me reading song titles. Does anyone have a guess?
You said October 98.
Yes.
I don't have a guess.
Christina Aguilera?
It is not. Your first hint is that somehow I have seen this artist in concert like 5 times.
Rob Zombie?
No, I will go to the songs. Remember, the early ones are album cuts. It's not going to do it, and it'll get more clear as we go. Your songs are The Speed of Pain, I Want to Disappear.
Linkin Park?
No. The Last Day on Earth, Coma White.
Metallica?
No. Rock is Dead.
This is so unpleasant.
I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me.
Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson. Oh. Can you remember the name of the album?
No. It's Antichrist Superstar or something?
That was his earlier album. This was Mechanical Animals. The only one I didn't get to was The Dope Show. The Dope Show was the first single from that album.
That was my jam.
I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me is amazing. I genuinely enjoy Marilyn Manson. He is kind of a self-parody, but he always was. At certain point, it's a good concert, and he always goes with, like, I saw Marilyn Manson and Alice Cooper, and I saw Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie. Like, he's...
That's a good bill.
He's just going around hanging out with other old metal guys. It's fun. Welp, hey, should we say something heartwarming? I don't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Robin.
Stay safe out there, guys. Remember that... You know, think about how bad this would be if you didn't have movies.
Yes. Now we're helping. Great job. Number one.